to fund the government for another 45 days. What happens next and the fallout from the fringe of his party.
Calling back the legislature, Governor Abbott calls third special session.
Bombing in breakaway region. Members of Austin Armenian community express outrage over what they consider to be an ethnic cleansing.
Getting the jab, where you can find a flu vaccine around campus.
This is Texas News Primetime.
News made for Longhorns.
Good evening, I'm Nicole Vargas.
And I'm Sophia Kurtz. Tonight, University Health Services will provide flu shots at the Student Services Building and Gregory Gym. Between October 4th and October 17th, UT students can log into the University Health Service portal to book an appointment to receive the flu vaccine. University Health Services accepts many insurance plans. However, if you are uninsured, the cost of the flu vaccine is just $10. Receiving a flu shot this fall is important as it takes 2 weeks from the time the vaccine is received to develop protection. However, if you recently tested for COVID and are still isolating, you will have to wait until your quarantine period is over. Students, get ready for some changes to the free application for federal student aid, or FAFSA. The form previously opened October 1st of every year, but it will now open sometime in December. Along with the new release date, there will be some changes to the form and the way students receive financial aid. Some of these adjustments include fewer questions on the form and turning what was once called the expected family contribution into the student aid index. Families can no longer expect financial aid benefits for having multiple children in college, and parents who provided the most financial support in 2022 will now be required to file the 2024-2025 FAFSA. Additionally, students will now be able to list 20 schools to receive their FAFSA application as opposed to the usual 10. Several more changes are being made as a result of the FAFSA Simplification Act, which aims to make the application less complex for families. Congress averts shutdown after a bill was passed to fund the government for 45 days. Conservatives wanted more sharp spending cuts and border security measures, whereas Democrats wanted additional aid to the Ukraine. Kevin McCarthy relied on Democrats to pass the bill, which might cost him his job as Speaker of the House of Representatives. Republican Representative Matt Gaetz filed a resolution earlier today to remove Representative Kevin McCarthy from his role as Speaker of the House, according to the Associated Press. Calls to remove McCarthy come after he used Democrats' support to pass a spending bill that will keep the government open until November 17th. A motion to vacate has never successfully been used to remove a speaker. Back on campus, fallout from SB 15, the Texas law banning trans athletes from competing in collegiate sports, has come to UT Club Sports in a story you'll see on Primetime. Primetime executive producer Kevin Myers has the story.
Club sports can offer students friendly competition, exercise, and community. But for transgender students, they may no longer be an option. On September 1st, Senate Bill 15, or SB 15, which prohibits trans college athletes from joining sports teams that match their gender identity, went into effect in Texas. A number of national governing bodies for club sports have instituted similar policies for their members. In response, 13 of the 48 club sports offered by the university now require students to submit proof of sex assigned at birth to participate. Texas Student Television has filed an open records request with the university to obtain a list of the 13 teams that have implemented this requirement. Currently, teams are requiring students to upload a copy of their birth certificates, passports, driver's licenses, or another government document that accurately states a student's sex assigned at birth.
I understand why it's in play, but I also do think it's harmful. It's also harmful for the individual themselves because, for instance, a trans man doesn't want to just be around a bunch of women.
Jazaya Gaska is president of Gamma Rho Lambda, a Greek organization for LGBTQ plus students at the University of Texas. And the organization has worked with Rec Sports in the past.
My members are already scared. It's going to be harder now. They're just going to avoid it altogether and probably join community sports, which is still good. But I know deep down they would probably want to stay with the university.
TSTV News reached out to the university for comment on the new policy and received this statement. Updates were implemented to comply with Texas Senate Bill 15 and the national governing body guidelines of relevant sport club organizations. For TSTV News, I'm Kevin Myers.
So, Kevin, first, the elephant in the room, your personal involvement with club sports. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we spoke with multiple UT professors about this issue, since it is an inherent conflict of interest. They said it was basically unavoidable, that students are just so interconnected with so many activities on campus. Their recommendation was to add the disclosures that we did put in the video at the beginning and the end, and that we're doing right now.
And what were the results of the open records request that you filed?
Yeah, so we received the list of the 13 teams that have implemented policies requiring proof of sex assigned at birth in order to participate. We flashed those up on screen during the package. Additionally, they clarified the proof they'll accept of sex assigned at birth, which they prefer a birth certificate, but they also state that other ID that, quote, accurately states a student's biological sex, end quote, will be counted. That's language pulled directly from SB 15.
Turning to tech, last week Amazon announced that they are investing $4 billion for a minority ownership position in Anthropic, an AI startup and competitor to OpenAI. Under this collaboration, both companies will develop text, image, and video responses that resemble human work. These features are expected to become part of Amazon's online customer service experience and product summaries. Anthropic has now made Amazon Web Services its primary cloud provider and will use the big retailer's semiconductors to fuel their AI applications moving forward. An eighth-grade teacher in the Hampshire Fennett School District was fired this past month for assigning an adaptation of Anne Frank's diary to her class. The teacher asked the students to read the 2018 graphic novel adapted from the diary. The publisher says the book is suitable for grades 8 to 12. This book has received backlash before from Florida and Texas. Parents were concerned about Anne Frank's comments on her sexuality, but this is not the first time Frank's sexuality has been mentioned to the public. In 1952, English language version of her writings have been taught in classrooms for decades. This could be alarming to the public as concerns of book bans are rising. Governor Greg Abbott said a third special session will start October 9th. He informed the Texas legislature about the session in a letter addressed to Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and House Speaker Dade Phelan. While Abbott did not specify the topic of the session, many expect the focus to be school choice, a program that allows parents to use state funding to help pay for their children's private school education. Abbott has been vocal about the issue and even said he would call another special session if school choice is not adopted in the first one. Lawmakers are set to return to Austin on October 9th at 1 p.m. for the session. Last week, a federal judge ruled Texas Senate Bill 12, commonly referred to as the drag ban, unconstitutional, finding it in violation of the First Amendment. Reporters Joseph Sweeney, Ariba Barmel, Kevin Myers, and Kevin Bosker spoke with drag advocates and performers when this bill was brought to the Senate floor in March. Why was this... Why was this law struck down on First Amendment bounds?
Well, the judge decided that the law is unconstitutionally vague according to the 1926 Supreme Court case Connolly v. General Construction Company. This court case decided that laws must not be so vague to the point where the average person cannot interpret them. So essentially the law was so vague that a lot of people found that the language could have been misconstrued to, ban other what could have been considered sexually explicit acts, such as I know that some advocates were talking about like how it would ban some other performances like Hooters or like Twin Peaks, for instance.
Now on to Primetime Nation with Hope Vanderberg. Hope, what's going on?
Last week, we brought you news of a potential federal government shutdown to occur on October 1st. This shutdown has been avoided for now. Congress voted Saturday to approve a bill for the temporary funding of federal agencies for 45 days, ending on November 17th. A permanent funding plan will still need to be passed by Congress and signed by the President to avoid a shutdown once the temporary funding concludes. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California died at age 90 Thursday night. Feinstein was the oldest sitting member of Congress, a position she served for over 30 years, longer than any other woman or senator from California. She was also elected as the first female mayor of San Francisco in 1978. Feinstein spent her congressional career advocating for items such as environmental protection, reproductive rights, and gun control, according to the Associated Press.
press. California Governor Gavin Newsom has selected LaFonza Butler to fill Feinstein's seat in the U.S. Senate. Butler, an advisor in Vice President Kamala Harris's 2020 campaign, is now the only Black female senator and the first LGBTQ plus person to represent the state of California in the Senate, according to the Associated Press. California Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed a bill Saturday that would have allowed striking workers from Hollywood and the hotel industry to receive unemployment checks. Newsom rejected this bill because the state's fund for unemployment benefits is currently experiencing a sizable debt of almost $20 billion from pandemic-related unemployment and unemployment fraud. The bill would have given unemployment checks from the state to workers who had been on strike for at least 2 weeks. Labor unions maintain that this is a very small percentage of striking workers, and giving them the unemployment benefits would not have had a serious effect on the current debt issue.
When we come back, primetime reporter Ethan Housewright joins us to discuss events in Azerbaijan. Stay tuned.
Attacks by Azerbaijani government on Armenian leaves thousands displaced. Can you provide a brief
This is the Holy Cross Coptic Orthodox Church, the epicenter of the Armenian community in the Austin area, according to members of the Austin Armenian Council. The separatist region of Nagorno-Karabakh, also known as Artsakh by Armenians, is currently facing disputes with neighboring Azerbaijan. On Tuesday, Azerbaijani forces began a bombing raid on the region, which resulted in both military and civilian deaths of ethnic Armenians. As Azerbaijani forces move into the region, thousands of ethnic Armenians face displacement and are forced to migrate back to mainland Armenia. Member of the Austin Armenian Council, Alex Avitian, had this to say about the attacks.
I think we're all obviously kind of horrified and concerned. But I think I speak for obviously the Austin Armenian community, but also the diaspora large, right? There's a diaspora in pretty like much every country in the world. So we're trying to kind of stay up to date, right? Get as much as information as possible. I think what we're really more concerned about and trying to get one word out about the situation and getting some international pressure. If you look at what are the definitions of a genocide, what are the definitions of an ethnic cleansing, you have a ethnic population. There are ethnic Armenians. There are also a religious minority. There are a Christian population, and they are being targeted exclusively based on those two criterias, and effectively slowly either starved through a blockade or exterminated. I don't know if there's another term for what's happening.
I spoke with UT professor Alan Cooperman, whose area of research includes both global policy and ethnic conflict. Here is what Professor Cooperman had to say.
So similarly, both the ethnic Armenians and the ethnic Azeris have long historical claims in Nagorno-Karabakh. They both value it a lot, not just for political sovereignty purposes, but for historical and cultural reasons. For a long time, the majority of the population has been ethnic Armenian.
During my talk with Cooperman, the region was in the process of experiencing a mass exodus of Armenians to avoid potential violence from Azerbaijan. 100,000 ethnic Armenians fled the region to mainland Armenia, which is more than 80% of the region's population. A greater humanitarian situation presents itself as the migrants begin crossing the border. If you would like to help provide relief to victims of this displacement, please visit the National Armenian Organization at anca.org or the Austin Armenian Community at www.armenianatx.com. This has been Ethan Housewright reporting for TSTV News.
One. So, Mr. Ethan Housewright, producer of this package, can you provide a brief overview of the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict for our viewers who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. So, this conflict is actually very difficult to understand. It's very convoluted. But essentially, the region of Nagorno-Karabakh is very important to both people groups, both the Azerbaijanis and the Armenians, from a historical and cultural reasons. And so basically, these nations were both combined during the Soviet Union, and once the Soviet Union fell, they both gained independence, and the region of Nagorno-Karabakh was placed in the hands of Azerbaijan, despite most of the population being ethnic Armenians. So the ethnic Armenians have been living there for a very long time, and basically there's just clashes back and forth over who should truly have possession of this land. And so we've seen outbreaks over the years, multiple times, the last one being in 2020, and then actually until on Tuesday, the 19th, is actually when we saw a big bombing raid and military operations by the Azerbaijani government, and basically forcing the surrender of the breakaway region and forcing many of ethnic Armenians to flee back to mainland Armenia.
Very well explained. So what sparked the most recent outbreak of hostilities in the Nagorno-Karabakh region?
So the Azerbaijani government, they claim that there's a landmine which killed two of their soldiers, and they're blaming this on Armenian separatists. They think they're responsible for the placement of these landmines. But a lot of the people I talked to, they believe that basically Azerbaijan was just waiting for any reason to be provoked and to invade the region.
Can you discuss the humanitarian aspects of the conflict, including the displacement of civilians?
Yeah, so it's actually very sad. We're seeing basically a max exodus of over 100,000 people at this point. And you have to think that's 100,000 people that lost their jobs, their property, are essentially forced to flee their country. And it places a really big burden on Armenia, because Armenia is a pretty poor post-Soviet country. And they basically have to accommodate like 100,000 people that just showed up in their country, essentially.
Well, so, yeah. Thank you for coming on, Ethan.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate it. Turning to our nation's healthcare system.
Over 75,000 healthcare workers are expected to go on strike Wednesday after their eight-union coalition failed to reach an agreement with Kaiser Permanente, one of the largest healthcare providers in the nation. The union coalition said that they remain, quote, far apart, unquote, from the company on issues regarding pay raises, staffing shortages, and pension plans. Negotiations are ongoing, but if the walkout does take place, the union coalition said it would be the largest healthcare strike in U.S. history.
Engineers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology have developed a device that can be implemented in type 1 diabetes patients to eliminate the need for insulin injections. This device includes an oxygen factory and millions of islet cells producing insulin. Scientists tested this technology by implanting it into diabetic mice, which maintained their glucose levels for over a month. Researchers are working on making a larger device, approximately the size of a stick of gum, to hopefully implant transplant in humans and spare diabetics the need for insulin injections. Now on for World, we have Trent. Trent, what is going on in the world?
Yes, so recently we had a bombing in Pakistan. So yeah, two suicide bombings in Pakistan on Friday killed 60 people and injured over 50. The first blast struck in Mastung during Eid Milan Unabi, a birthday celebration of the Prophet Muhammad. The initial investigation found that a suicide bomber tried to fight his way toward the front of the procession before an officer intervened and the explosives were detonated. Over 500 miles away in the Hongu district, another bomber detonated in a mosque where about 40 people were in attendance for Friday prayer, killing at least 5 people. No group has claimed responsibility as of now. A fire at a nightclub complex in Spain has killed at least 13 people. At 6 a.m. local time in Murcia, Spain, reports of a fire at the Tea Tree complex led to officers and firefighters rushing to the scene. The blaze was contained later that morning, with most damage sustained in the Fonda Milagros Club. No cause has been determined as of yet. The municipal government has declared the next 3 days as an official mourning period for the lives lost. A bombing in the Turkey capital, Ankara, prompted swift military action against Turkish rebels. The PKK, Kurdistan Workers' Party, is a terror group fighting for an independent Kurdish state within Turkey. The group led an attack targeting the Interior Ministry. However, no deaths were reported. Hours later, the Turkish government responded by launching airstrikes at Mount Kwandi, a stronghold for PKK near the Iranian border. Turkey claimed the airstrikes destroyed 20 PKK targets. No death toll was announced.
Thank you for coming on, Trent. When we return, highlights from Texas's last football and volleyball games. Stay with us.
On Tuesday.
Welcome back. Joining us for Press Box on Primetime, we have Campbell Choate. How are you doing this evening, Campbell?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Texas volleyball struggled to find their rhythm at the beginning of their season. Coming off of a national championship, Texas's ranking dropped from number 1 to 8. Now that conference play has started, how did the Longhorns do this past week?
Texas volleyball hosted number 9 BYU in a 2-game series this past week. Both games were extremely competitive and every point was fought for. In game 1 against the Cougars, the Longhorns lost the first set but came back with the fire for the next 3. Madison Skinner led the team with 15 kills and also had a second double-double of the season. Freshman setter Ella Swindle also had a great game with 37 assists. Middle blocker Bella Bergmark had 5 kills, and the Longhorns ended up winning 3-1. Gregory Jim was even more hype leading up to the game 2, where the Longhorns also won 3-1. From last season to this one, Skinner has now started playing all 6 rotations and had a career high of 18 digs. Libero Emma Halter also had 2 service aces, and Swindle had 3. Texas Volleyball will host the Kansas Jayhawks for the 3rd conference series this Thursday and Friday.
Texas football has had such a successful season that many fans are claiming that Texas is back. How did Texas football do this Saturday, and what's up next for them?
As for Texas football, we are 5-0 for the first time since 2009. This Saturday, Texas started off a little slow against Kansas and struggled to get through their defense. Historically being a stronger team in the first half, Texas showed us that they can turn up the heat later in the game. Coach Stark said he told his players at halftime to trust the plan, don't get discouraged, we need to finish drives. His guidance clearly worked as Texas scored 27 points in the second half. QB Quinn Ewers had 2 touchdowns and threw a total of 325 yards. Jonathan Brooks had another great game and scored 2 touchdowns. Defense held the Kansas offense as Jalen Ford led the team with 7 tackles. The Longhorns will travel up to the Cotton Bowl stadium this weekend for the Red River rivalry game against Oklahoma. Kickoff is at 11.
The Major League Baseball regular season has officially ended. The Texas Rangers and Houston Astros had tied records in the AL West just a few days ago. So what ended up happening?
The MLB postseason is coming up quickly as the Texas Rangers just clinched their playoff appearance for the first time since 2016. The Rangers beat the Seattle Mariners Saturday night, winning 6-1 and securing a wild card spot in the American League. The Rangers will start their playoff journey this Tuesday against the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rangers were also hoping to clinch the AL West, but that title ended up going to the Houston Astros. The Astros beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 8-1 on Sunday and won the tiebreaker between them and the Rangers. Astros third baseman Alex Bregman said, "A lot of people want to know what it's like if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know."
Thanks, Campbell. We experienced technical difficulties in our coverage of the Texas bill to restrict drag. Here's the story as reported by Primetime's Joseph Sweeney.
On Tuesday, U.S. District Court Judge David Hittner struck down Texas's Senate Bill 12 following a lawsuit by the American Civil Liberties Union of Texas.
Advocates of drag, a form of exaggerated gender expression, alleged the bill would criminalize their performances when it was first introduced in March.
Drag is not inherently sexual, and that's basically what they're trying to argue, is that drag and queer expression is sexual, and they want us to hide, basically. They want us to keep existing in our nightclubs and dark spaces that we've always had to exist. It impacts our ability to do business and make a living. This is my full-time job.
Absolutely ridiculous trying to take our rights away and just performing and being drag queens, and they're trying to make all of these businesses registered as sexual businesses, which would completely change a lot of their funding.
Signed into law by Texas Governor Greg Abbott in May, the bill would have fined businesses hosting sexually explicit performances up to $10,000, with such performances done in front of children being punishable by up to 1 year in prison.
But drag advocates insist these performances are not inherently sexual nor harmful to children.
This state is one of the worst in child education, almost at the bottom for child health care, and this is the priority that these legislatures want to focus on.
Drag is just a form of art, and like any form of art can be modified for any kind of audience and be produced by many different kinds of people.
District 66 Senator Matt Shaheen, who amended the original bill, said in a May press release that he will not tolerate children being exposed to explicit sexual content from any performer in Texas. While District 1 Senator Brian Hughes, who authored the original bill, told the Texas Tribune he plans to challenge Hittner's ruling, bringing the case to the U.S. Supreme Court if necessary.
The number one cause of children's deaths in America is gun violence and school shootings. So if that's where you senators want to come, y'all should focus on gun violence rather than focusing on drag queens who never, ever, ever hurt children, harm children in any ways.
Come to the show, see what we do, see who we are, and just be respectful.
This is Joseph Sweeney, TSTV News.
When we return, Lila Lacone joins us to talk entertainment.
Welcome back to Texas News Primetime. Now on entertainment with Layla Lacon. Layla, what has been going on in the world of entertainment?
As of September 24th, after 146 days of labor shortage, the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture Television Producers have finally come to an agreement on Tuesday. The union leadership revealed to the public that they voted to end the strike, and the next day, Wednesday, September 27th, after 148 days, the strike officially ended. This marks the end of the second longest strike in Hollywood history. The end of the strike then allows for talk shows and late night shows such as Drew Barrymore, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, and others have announced that they will resume on October 2nd.
So, Layla, how do you feel about the strike coming to an end? Are you excited to have late-night television back? Are you a viewer of late-night television?
Yes, I am. I'm really excited to see Jimmy Kimmel again.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big Drew Barrymore fan, so I'm also very excited.
On Friday, September 29th, Dwayne Keith Davis, a.k.a. Keith D., was arrested at the Las Vegas police for murder of the late rapper Tupac Shakur. The police believe that Davis orchestrated the plan for the homicide with several other individuals. Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Lieutenant Jason Johansson stated that the news conference on Friday that all other suspects are deceased. Officials have stated that Davis set to appear in court in the next few days for a hearing. A jury trial date will be announced following the hearing. The hearing will be taking place 27 years after Tupac's murder, which was September 7th, 1996.
Wow. So why do you think it's taken so long to arrest the suspect?
That's a good question. I think that really there was no leads. As it said, other three suspects were deceased.
That makes sense.
The beloved actor Michael Gambon, most famous for his role as Dumbledore in Harry Potter, has died at the age of 82 years old. Michael Gambon passed away Wednesday night, September 27th. The following Thursday, Gambon's family released a brief statement through a public relations company stating, "Michael died peacefully in a hospital with his wife, Anne, and son Fergus at his bedside, following a bout of pneumonia." Co-star Daniel Radcliffe, who played the role of Harry Potter, also released an emotional statement and said that Gambon was one of the most brilliant, effortless actors I've ever had the privilege of working with.
Wow, that's so sad. Many people of, you know, our generation grew up with Dumbledore as a household character. Are you a Harry Potter fan yourself?
I actually am not. I never saw the movies growing up.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. So that's your Monday briefing. From all of us at TSTV News, thank you for watching. Now go out and change the world.